Sex, gambling, celebrity, theatre voices got the lot. This week we've been in a strip club in New York with Ally McBeal's Jane Krakowski, and in Cuba with Ewan McGregor looking to, as the song says, increase the size of his bundle in Michael Grandage's new look at Guys and Dolls. We've been visiting old girlfriends across the USA with David Schwimmer, otherwise known as Ross from Friends, in the world premiere of Some Girls, and we've been seduced by Ben Chaplin pulling off a clever scam in the European premiere of This Is How It Goes. 42-year-old American dramatist and filmmaker Neil LaBute is famed for offering up filthy talk for troubled times, Scenes of Intolerance. That's actually the name of one of his very early theatre pieces, but it could also serve as the subtitle for almost all his work. LaBute burst onto the international scene in 1997 with a movie of his play In the Company of Men, a lethal examination of misogyny in which two white-collar workers date then dump a deaf woman to strike a blow for supposedly oppressed mankind. Most of his subsequent work has been equally dedicated to eviscerating men behaving very, very badly, and his two most recent plays are no exception. Indeed, so intent are they in making statements about male behaviour that both plays' leading characters are simply called Man. The man in Some Girls, played in David Grindley's production by David Schwimmer, is a 33-year-old on the brink of marriage who crosses the USA visiting four ex-girlfriends, all of whom he dumped. So, on Jonathan Fensom's unaccountably dowdy set of four different hotel rooms, he meets up with his first love, Sam, Catherine Tate. Tyler, who taught him about sex, Sarah Powell, a married older woman with whom he had an affair, Leslie Manville, and finally, smart and beautiful Bobby, Saffron Burrows. Desperate to be absolved of his guilt, he teases out of each of the women how they feel now about their relationship and the breakup. His excuses for his behaviour at the time are varied, but his real reason is simple. He has always been, and still is, afraid of the C word, commitment. I'm David Benedict, and joining me in today's Marriage of True Minds to discuss all three plays is Charles Spencer of the Daily Telegraph, Kate Bast of the Independent on Sunday, and Patrick Marmion. So, Charlie Spencer, were you convinced by LaBute's sentimental journey?
I enjoyed it. I think it's actually about as close as LaBute will get to writing a romantic comedy. I mean, it's not actually as hard as earlier plays we've seen by him, and it's reasonably well-meaning, I think. He doesn't really skewer the central character as much as one would have hoped. And it's quite interesting. I had a look at the text, the printed text, and in that, it's quite clear that the main reason he's going back to see all these girls is that he's recording them for a magazine piece he's going to write. And this bit was rather lost in the production, I think. And in fact, it's been interesting to know if David Schwimmer couldn't bear to play a complete shit and took this out, because it was obvious that actually the whole thing was a project in research for an article. But I still think it's quite entertaining. It's not great LaBute, I don't think, and it's sort of more West End friendly LaBute, and hence it's, you know, hence the casting of Schwimmer and its place on Shaftesbury Avenue. But I still think it's quite entertaining. I found that there were bits that I reluctantly recognised in myself, and I think he nails very well that kind of preening male vanity. And I thought the four women were sharply and interestingly contrasted with. Particularly good work from Leslie Manville as the discarded older woman who exacts a really typical LaBute-ish revenge.
Okay, well, we'll get on to the women in a moment. I'll go to the other man on the panel here, Patrick. Are you in Charlie's camp on this?
No, it didn't do it for me, I'm afraid. I didn't think it was awful, but I did find it vacuous. It seemed like a friend's post-mortem, really, to me, and it seemed to be full of solipsism without any depth to it all. I mean, I'm a great fan of solipsism, especially in literature, but, there was no depth or texture to it, and so to me it was just like, you know, the film Alfie with guilt, and I found it just dreadfully shallow.
The play is very likely to, I imagine, divide down gender lines. You are the sole female voice here, Kate. Would you like to speak in behalf of yourself rather than womankind?
Well, that's a very interesting point about dividing down gender lines. I'm not sure it does, actually. But just on that level regarding the play, I'm kind of intrigued by why all the female characters have men's names.
Very good point.
It's called Some Boys, basically, which I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means it's like a kind of Oscar Wilde cryptic gay play, or if he's actually saying... I suppose he might be saying something about the stereotypes that he's meant to have written about before, which is all guys are nasty and all women are kind of innocent victims, which actually his plays do qualify because The Shape of Things is about a really horrible woman. And I think here you could kind of discuss whether the women are stronger than they seem or who's actually the weaker in the end, and whether David Schwimmer's character is actually sort of emotionally vulnerable. In this version, he seems so at the end. He seems incredibly upset at the end because he doesn't get a tape recorder out. What I thought about the play, I thought it was extremely well directed by David Grindley, and I thought it was very sharp on the sort of small talk that's actually painful and poignant and bruising. You know, when he's making sort of light small talk with these women who are incredibly hurt by him, I thought that was all precisely pointed and very good. I think the play is structurally immature. So what you have is you have four scenes which are basically tête-à-tête with four women. And in a way, that feels rather uncomplex and rather simplistic to me for a fairly mature playwright. And actually, it feels as if he's written some very good scenes and put them together. And the last scene is actually not a brilliantly climactic, strong scene, I don't think.
I wondered at the end whether, in fact, what he did was he wrote the last scene first, and that actually the play is really the last scene. And it actually lacks a climax here, partly because of the casting, but more because actually that is what the meat of the play is about. He goes back on the brink of his marriage and sees the woman that he actually discovers is the woman that he really loves. So you have that scene about I shouldn't have rejected you and all of that, but LaBute realises, that's not a play, so I'll write three more in. Because actually, if you get that scene at the end and you go, this is the meat of the play, it rather begs the question, so why did you go back and see them, other than to go, here's the woman that taught me sex, here's the older woman, and here's my first sweetheart? He doesn't need to see any of those women.
Well, it's a kind of midlife crisis. I mean, in all of them, you get intimations that he's not sure he wants to settle down, and maybe he's actually sort of lusting after all of them on different levels. I think you're right. I think, in a way, Saffron Burrows is the weakest actress in a very strong set, so the last scene in which she appears is less good. But there's also something about the third scene, which is the Leslie Manville scene, where she exacts a kind of revenge that's very strong, and so it feels less if it peters off a bit, I think.
Charlie, you're looking to chip in.
No, not really. No, I think it does fizzle out slightly. I think you're right. On the other hand, I think all four of them, in their own way, are strong scenes and interesting scenes. I mean, I think actually Catherine Tate's very good as the sort of disappointed suburban housewife. And I think there's an odd thing about this play. I think that almost for the first time there's some compassion in the writing here, not just for the women, but also I think for the man. I think that, you know, he's not in touch, and certainly in this version that we've been presented with, and it's interesting to know if the writer approved it, you know, he's not entirely contemptible. I mean, he's seeking validation in a way, isn't he? I think I also find it quite interesting as someone who's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because we have this thing of making amends to people, and it's almost like an amends play, and that's certainly why he claims he's going round. But I think what's interesting, and I think the most interesting thing about it is actually, while claiming he's seeking amends, what's he actually wanting? And I think it's almost to be told that, you know, he's still a little boy and he wants to be told he was great and he wasn't to blame.
And of course, that makes the casting of Schwimmer very, very key, because he was puppyish for 10 years on television, being rather doleful and lovable and messing up his love life and not knowing whether or not he should get together with Jennifer Aniston. And so there he's got this kind of well of goodwill. So actually he's going around being fantastically selfish to these people, and yet manages to make that character rather more adorable than perhaps he should be, because everybody goes, oh, that's Ross Geller.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I think this is all, you know, you're projecting all this onto the performances, just as I think the actors are projecting a great deal onto the text. I really don't feel there's that much in it. And one of the things that, for example, that struck me quite strongly was why we have a procession of women, all of whom are angry with him one way or another. I don't see any reason why they should be angry with him. He's such a kind of wet fish, you know. And what's
he did
more,
dump them all. They were all in love with him, and he did dump them all.
There's nothing particularly about the dumping. I mean, we'll get dumped. You know, there's no reason why you go around harbouring, you know, this great rage.
People do.
They do. But the point is that if this had any depth to it, he would also have some anger towards them. You know, it is in the nature of relationships. How come this guy never dumped in his life?
Well, they didn't dump him.
See, the thing is, if you structure a play in this way, you are inevitably going to present a shallow character and a series of other shallow characters who are simply repeating themselves.
I mean, I kind of support you. I'm not sure whether who's got the wrong end of the stick here, but my point about the casting of Schwimmer is that it gives the play a warmth it doesn't have. That's my point.
I think that that Charlie's absolutely right about the tape machine. And if they had left the tape machine in, this character would have been a lot more interesting. And having removed it, they tried to kind of, you know, get some insidious little bits of compassion in. And compassion, I think, is the great vice of the contemporary stage and art. But we should leave that for another
it's the absolute crucial defining characteristic of a playwright.
Compassion? No, absolute nonsense. Compassion. Well, compassion has become sentimentality in disguise, and I think that a playwright's obligation is to write well-rounded characters. But I think that what it's turned into is that there's too many writers around at the moment who are just trying to write characters rather that you're going to like, you know, and this then becomes a culture of ingratiation, and I think it's kind of pathetic.
Can I just say something about the apologising that Charlie was talking about with AA? I didn't see it as linked to that. I actually thought it was to do with Neil LaBute being Mormon and Christian, and I actually thought it was I think he writes morality plays for the 21st century, and I thought it was very interesting about regret and apologising. And on one level, this guy is going around being entirely selfish and still stupid and still hurtful. And on another level, though I'm not sure Schwimmer kind of conveyed that, he's obviously racked with guilt and in some way is regretting what he's done and is trying badly to compensate. And I think the interesting thing the play says about it is not in a sort of, late Shakespeare way, you know, you go through a cycle and you repent and everyone is reunited. He's actually saying something rather dark and unchristian. He's saying, actually, look how selfish the people who say sorry are. The reason he's doing this is to make himself feel better. And someone actually spells that out in the play.
And I think that's the central problem with the Schwimmer casting, is that, despite what the row we just had with Patrick about it, that Schwimmer lends it spurious warmth because of everything that Ross brings. And actually, the point that Charlie made earlier about had there been the tape recorder on the set, he would have been revealed to have more than, you know, a slither of ice in his soul. If he'd been nastier, you might have been able to see this play as having the depth that I think you've discerned.
I think that's true, but having got David Schwimmer, I thought it was actually rather interesting and more subtle than many a play is, because I was thinking, oh, I'd like to see more flashes of kind of feverous guilt or darkness. And then I thought, well, actually, it's quite interesting that he's just shallow, and actually that's more disturbing, and actually that's how people are. And he's just going around.
There's two great LaBute twists in this play, which I won't give away, but which I think are so characteristic of him, and which you can't actually imagine any other dramatist pulling off.
Yes, there's a great gag in the last scene, which we won't reveal, but it's a marvelous bit of misdirection. You're led completely down a blind avenue. It's
with the older mistress, an absolutely fabulous idea and motif. And I thought that there's one other bit in the play which I think shows that it isn't as shallow as Patrick is suggesting. I thought the scene where he goes to see Sam, who's the sort of good time girl, and feels some guilt about the way it ended. And she says to him, actually, I think I broke it up with you, and you've no need to feel any guilt at all. And it was because that his whole relationship was with her was coloured by the previous relationship, and he'd imported the guilt into it that he didn't need to feel. I think that was very interesting psychologically and true, probably.
I do think my final thought on this is that it seems to be very odd that you get a character lying. He says to each of them, we broke up. No, And it becomes clear that no, he dumped every one of them. It seems very odd that you'd write a play in which a character goes and lies to the very people who can tell the truth about those lies. It's a contrivance. Labute loves contrivance, and there's plenty more of that in This Is How It Goes, which is at the Donmar Warehouse. It's also another play in which the hero, or the anti-hero, is a budding fiction writer, a job which makes people suspicious that he might cannibalise his dealings with them. And anyone that was worried about that would be right not to trust Ben Chaplin in this role. He's instantly likeable. He's a 30-something white character who inveigles his way into our company by chatting easily to us at the top of the play. He shows us how recently he has returned to his small-town America home, where he's accidentally met the beautiful white Megan Dodds, who he adored in high school. Although she's remained the woman of his dreams, she's been married for 12 increasingly frustrating years to a track star named Cody, who's now a very successful pillar of the community, played by Idris Elba, who is black. This, says Chaplin, is how it goes. Except it isn't. As he casually mentions, he's an unreliable narrator. The acted-out scenes we see aren't the objective truth he pretends them to be. They're portrayed as he wishes them to be. Nothing, we increasingly discover, is what it seems. Scenes are repeated with entirely different slants. And as the thriller-style plot begins to twist, people's real feelings about race and relationships turn out to be an awful lot nastier than they pretend. In Moishe Kaufman's production, on an elegant abstract set by Tim Hatley, lit by Paul Pyant, the opening sound effect is a roll on a side drum leading to a cymbal crash. It's the sound conjurers use to accompany the surprise reveal of a conjuring trick. Kate Bassett, do you think this play is more than an elaborate conjuring trick?
Well, both these plays, I'm not quite satisfied with the structure, and I think this is a more interesting and stronger play, and it actually really got under my skin afterwards, thinking back about it. In some ways, I feel it's a sort of intellectual exercise in that the main character keeps stepping out and doing these monologues where he talks about himself writing this story and we're watching his version of what happened, or maybe his fantasy of it. And so he keeps stepping out in a rather sort of Pirandello-style way, where you think, where he's talking about sort of art and life and whether he's made it up. And sometimes I found that rather irritating and a bit of an intellectual exercise. But at the same time, it does really get under your skin. I mean, it is a sort of, Ben Chaplin's character is a kind of 21st century Iago, basically. And he is ruining people's lives, actually with a different end to Iago. But there is something horribly, what I was saying about the other character in the other play, the fact that he's so blasé and so kind of charming and seems so shallow is actually ultimately, strength, after a long time, very disturbing, because you just think this is just washing over him.
Kate mentioned there Iago. Mamet, I'm sorry, not Mamet, Labute is at great pains to point out all his references here. He throws in references to Othello. There's endless discussions about Hitchcock plays. There's discussions about the Mayor of Casterbridge. Is this too conceited and contrived for its own good, Patrick?
Not too much so. I mean, it is quite clever. I mean, it's noticeably clever. And apparently, the play is dedicated to Harold Pinter. But it's the name that you accidentally dropped then seems to be much more accurate. That is David Mamet, and he's doing something very interesting here in terms of trying to conjure something out of language. And as we know, the Ben Chaplin character is a sort of Iago figure, as a sort of playmaker who flips his words around like so many burgers on a barbecue, and just with this kind of, you know, affected nonchalance, which is designed to just to sort of, you know, provoke and get under your skin. It doesn't really get under your skin. It causes some mild disturbance on the outer hemispheres of your brain, I think. But what the interesting thing, which is buried in all of this, I think, is the fact that what I think he's trying to do here is trying to compare the logic of fiction with the logic of life. And that that just as in fiction, things kind of unfold out of each other in a kind of in a continuous form, so they do in life. And I think that what he's trying to do with that is trying to suggest that this is some kind of moral observation, but in fact it's an aesthetic observation. And I think that this is the big problem with Labute's work, and I think it goes back to Some Girls as well, is that he can't tell the difference between an aesthetic judgment and a moral judgment.
Charlie, was there enough of the content that Patrick doesn't see for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that this is an intensely moral play, and I think in many ways that Labute's Mormonism is, as Kate was suggesting, is a crucial factor. He writes morality plays, and he's interested in that area between absolute evil of the Iago type and the drift into that. And I think he gets that brilliantly with Ben Chaplin, who seems so nice and sort of funny and reassuring at the start, and then is gradually revealed that the really vicious racism. I mean, there's a moment when he describes something he did on an aeroplane that actually had the audience gasping in the Donmar, because we're so much on his side, and then he suddenly reveals what he actually feels about black people. I think that you used the word misdirection, and it was the word I used in my review. He is an absolute master, and I think actually, Kate, I think it's really well structured, because it'd be just because of the way you're swept along, and then the rug is so pulled under your feet by one brilliantly placed scene very near the end, and then, as you say, afterwards you start replaying the whole thing. And I think this is possibly his best play, in that it is exceptionally elegantly constructed, but also has a very powerful moral force to it. And Chaplin in particular, I think, gives a mesmerising performance, like a conjurer.
Perhaps I'm being a bit unfair about the structure. I think what I mean is, I think it's really interestingly and cleverly structured. What I felt was, perhaps you're right, perhaps it is complete in itself. I felt there was one flashback and there was one scene replayed in a different way, and I felt other plays I can think of have sort of elaborated on those games more interestingly. But in itself, it is very tight, and the flashback is an amazingly shocking twist. You know,
I mean, I think I'm somewhere in the middle of all this. I think in the end that it's like being in a hall of mirrors. Whilst you're in it, it's absolutely fascinating, and the games that he's playing, it's actually weirdly like a McDonagh play. It's like the Pillow Man. You never know where you are. The rug keeps being pulled out from underneath you, which means that it's consistently entertaining on really a lot of levels. You're going, is this racism? Is this pretending to be racism? Is this people testing the water? What's going on? Then you add in the kind of the Double Indemnity plot twist, which is also borrowed from the David Mamet film The Spanish Prisoner, where nothing is revealed to be what you thought it was. The whole thing you've been looking at backwards. But actually, when you come away from it, whilst one can admire its construction endlessly, you go, so what was it about? It actually, there's sort of no there.
Exactly.
It is a big tease.
I had the opposite reaction. I wasn't actually deeply moved at all while I was watching it. I was intrigued by the games he was playing. And then, having thought back about the characters, I became more disturbed by Ben Chaplin's character. I think the thing about Pinter is interesting, in that it's dedicated to Pinter, and it is like Pinter, in that Pinter, for example, in The Birthday Party, sends you into this sort of free fall, and suddenly you're not sure if it's someone's fantasy. And his plays do that. You're suddenly thinking, this has just gone surreal and really weird, like a nightmare. And I don't think it's realistic anymore, having seemed realistic. And also, occasionally in Pinter, there's this kind of upsurge in a character of insane bigotry and hatred. Maybe that's why it's dedicated to Pinter. But what I thought was slightly weaker about this play is that he needs to do that sort of stepping out structure, which I found slightly too self-conscious.
It's like films resorting to voiceover because they can't actually dramatise the moment.
Whereas with Pinter, you're just suddenly falling down a well, going, my God, where did this come from? And it's more frightening, I think.
Pinter doesn't need the tricks in order to get you to the same place. Yeah.
But I do think it's a fascinating piece.
I've just got two points to make. The first, I think, is I think why La Boute is special is one of the reasons you said. I mean, there are few writers who are quite so entertaining while you're watching them. I mean, he really does give good value on the entertainment front. And secondly, I think this play has got a lot to say about racism. I think it makes two important and actually quite contentious points. The first is the sort of fiction amongst the sort of liberal middle classes that we're all colourblind now. And in fact, we're not. And I think he does that very, very well indeed. And the second one, the black character. I think he writes very, you know, he's not a sympathetic man. He's not an easy man. And I think he gets very well that kind of knee-jerk chippiness of racial minorities who often take offence when, you know, no offence is intended. It's a very, very subtle portrait of an ethnic minority.
And I mean, I think that writing is much riskier.
Much riskier.
It's actually much riskier than the writing that's sort of being applauded here. I think that Idris Shah's Elba's performance is very, very strong, and it really matches the writing, and that's the most interesting element of the play.
It's a very gritty. It's a brave play for a white man to have written, I think.
I also think it's kind of interesting because it actually leaves questions hanging. So there's this scene where the black character is extremely objectionable and kind of batters his wife, and then they replay that scene with the assumption that maybe it's the Ben Chaplin's nasty, stereotyped imagination applied to the black character. But then the play is actually, as a whole, not sympathetic. The black guy does not come across well in any scenes, really. And so at the end, you're thinking, well, hang on, this is still by a white guy. Is this accurate? And I think it is substantially about something. It's teasing, but actually about a very big social issue and about whether you're racist watching it.
I think it's trying to be about those things. I think it's right. But I think that, you know, I don't think it's a great portrait of the black character. I think what it is a very good sketch of the character. Because he is just this kind of slightly chippy, materialist, basically. And there's really not much more to him than that. I don't feel that I kind of had any stronger sense of who he was from the end of it. And similarly, you know, the woman character's on stage for a huge period of time. And I wrote almost no notes on her because there was really nothing to say about her. And it seems to me that Hirton Le Boute has almost nothing to say about either of these characters. And whilst it's superficially brave of him to take this subject on, and I think that it is right to attack the fiction that Islingtonian middle classes kind of thing, or the equivalent in America, are colourblind. It's not true. But I think, you know, that Le Boute is trying to have it both ways here. He's trying to allow some kind of sort of, you know, racism and even misogyny to kind of, run around the stage a bit and simultaneously disavow it. And I think that part of his cleverness lies in the way that he can pull that off. He can get his bits out in public, if you like, and still sort of, pretend it was just smoke and mirrors and disappear off into the changing rooms afterwards.
I think there's something true about that. I did, as I was watching it, think these are a bit two-dimensional. And I think if you were acting Cody's part and the woman's part, it's about subtle degrees of differentiation within a rather limited range. So they do have scenes where the woman is more strong and more independent and then a weaker figure.
But remember, it's all seen through his eyes.
Yes,
which is
a very, very good excuse for Le Boute yet again not writing really substantial women's roles. They're always attendant upon the men, never really the other way around. Some Girls is at the Gielgud Theatre until the 13th of August. This Is How It Goes is at the Donmar Warehouse till the 9th of July, and then on tour going to the Bristol Old Vic and the Lowry in Salford.